He's 5'2" and he's 6'4". He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist.
Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and this is the show is Able, and this is our series that we did with we're doing with Vietnam veterans and veterans in general. And today we I'm really excited about this, that we have Brigadier General Joseph Ulatowski. Is that, did I get, I got that right. Good. And I was looking up in the dictionary a military person, and his name was listed in Webster's as a career military, because I think if you could describe anybody as career military, it would be, can I call you Joe? Is that okay?
Please.
In our interview? Okay. And Joe's here with us. And Joe, you're, I think you, when we talked earlier, you said you're 96 and a half.
Right.
And heavy on the half, right? And we're, you know,
absolutely.
We're always working on the other half, you know. You know, that was, those halves were important when I was 20 and a half and going to be 21, and when I was 15 and a half and going to be 16 so I could drive a car.
Oh, yeah.
And take girls out, you know, and that kind of stuff. So that's kind of where we are. And you've lived on Vashon how long, Joe?
Oh, about 23 years now.
Okay. And what brought you to Vashon? It's,
I'm sorry?
What brought you to Vashon?
Well, our daughter lived out here.
Uh-huh.
And we came out one time. We were looking for a place.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the property and ended up buying it and building on it. And we've been here ever since.
Yeah, and I know you've done a lot of things with the community here, with community preparedness.
Yes, I basically started the program.
Right, and that's really cool. I think that's a, and of course, one of the things about Vashon is we have lots of volunteers. So that's, and I guess it does take a community to do those kinds of things.
Oh yeah,
and you live here on Vashon with your wife, and
yes.
And how long have you been married?
70+ years.
Wow. Wow.
Accent on the plus.
Yes,
right?
Yes. So the marriage is working out then, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, I've only been married 53, so I've got a ways to go. So anyhow, one of the things that we'd like to talk about is talking about your career in the military. And one of the things that I noticed from reading some of the stuff and your background and talking to you was just the variety. I mean, the variety of different places you were and things that you did. And so let's start out. You enlisted in the Army when you were 17 and a half. And that was, and I assume that was by choice.
I enlisted. The draft was still going on, but I enlisted.
Uh-huh. And was that, at that time, it seemed to me like it was in the end of World War, towards the end of World War II, but in 1945 when you enlisted. And where did you do your basic training, and where did...
Basic training was at Camp Cross, South Carolina.
Okay. And then after that, you were, then where did they send you?
Well, after that, one young lieutenant came up to me and said, "Would you like to go? Or did you ever think about going to OCS?" And I said, "No, I was waiting for you guys to make me a corporal."
Uh-huh.
And I had never thought about it. And he said, well, there's a board meeting next Friday morning, and I think you ought to go before it. And so I did, and they sent me to Fort Benning, and I became what was known as a 90-day wonder.
A 90-day wonder. Yeah, well, you've got a lot more than 90 days behind you now. So I guess you're in the 1,000-day wonder now. So that's good. So you went to the OCS, and that took, a year or so? Or how long did that take?
At the time, it was 17 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And when you finished that, you came out what was known as a Senate temporary lieutenant in the United States Reserve.
And the, so,
Army Reserve.
Army Reserve, okay. And
on active duty.
Reserve on active duty. I like that. That's good. And did your wife, you were married at that time?
Oh, no.
Not you weren't married.
No, I was a young, happy bachelor at that time.
A young, happy bachelor, yes. Okay, and so then where was your next move?
Oh, went through a bunch of places. For example, Fort McClelland, Alabama, to basic training, and then up to the School for Government of Occupied Areas for 6 weeks to get ready to go to Germany, and received orders for Korea.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And ended up in Korea then in the military government, where none of us who were in military government at that point really knew what we were doing, so we learned by hook and by crook.
I think sometimes that's the best way to learn is...
It is.
You know, even when I talk to my... Even when I talk to my student teachers, I always say, you know, you can read all about classroom behavior in a book, but until you get 26 sets of eyes staring at you, it's a different world.
Well, yes, and I was commissioned I was still 18 years old, so you're talking about a 19-year-old kid running a Korean county, and everything was by guess and by God, and that lasted for about 7 or 8 months, and then I became a second lieutenant in headquarters as a supply officer.
Uh-huh.
There is nothing lower than a second lieutenant supply officer in the United States Army.
But it sounds impressive, though, you know.
Yes, you had to say sir to the secretaries who came down for notebooks and pencils.
Ah, yeah. That's great. And so was the when you were in Korea at that time, correct?
Yeah.
And what was happening in Korea at that time? At the was there fighting, or was it just kind of...
No. That was in 1946.
Right, okay.
The war was over. The Japanese, the United States... This is where you start getting into history to understand what's going on. The United States put two divisions in Korea to accept the surrender of the Japanese below the 38th parallel.
Oh, okay.
And when they did that, we said there was no government whatsoever. Well, backing off, the Japanese, while they were in occupation there, never let the Korean people go above the most menial level. Essentially, they treated them as
slaves, probably.
Yeah, as slaves would be the best way to describe it. And they had your own level supervisors and all that, but they never got any place. So when the Japanese left, all structure in the country dissolved, or never was there. So the Americans then said, we have to set up something and build a structure here and then get the hell out. And so essentially that was the entire plan. While up north, what had happened in North Korea, the Russians came in and built a governmental structure of their own design and then started training military. So our job was to give the government over to Korea and get out.
And kind of help build the infrastructure.
Build the infrastructure, do everything to get something up and working. So that was the job, and you started at the province level. You put some Americans in down there, and they built a local structure and worked with the Koreans and all of that. And as they felt that they were beginning to take over, they pulled the people out of the field. And everything started moving very, very slowly to get out of Korea.
Okay. And I understand there's still, even now, certain amount of angst, I guess, between Koreans and Japanese because of what occurred.
Oh, yes.
Occurred, yeah. In fact, I have two daughters that are adopted from Korea. And I remember when they said when the kids go through, when they're coming to the United States, when they go through Tokyo, you just let them, you know, be very careful. And that can be a problem, a certain degree. So I understand that part, too, that the Koreans were treated very badly by the Japanese. And really treated as second-class citizens.
Second-class would be a compliment.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Did you stay in Korea when the war was going on, or did you come back and then go back to Korea?
No, I left, and there's an entire chapter of history written in Korea.
Right.
Personal history, and came back to the States and went into what they called a competitive tour, where the Army had come up and looked after World War II and said, our force structure is out of line and we have to get 1,000 new lieutenants into the force structure. And to do that, we're going out to all serving active duty officers who are not regular Army and who are, and those who were in and got out and get, I don't know what the number is, approximately sure. 10,000 competing for regular Army commissions. Mm-hmm. So I was sent to Fort Ord, California, where I had to undergo this competitive tour. And then when I finished that, left that, became a paratrooper, and found out that I had been selected. So I was a second lieutenant in the regular Army. I'd already been promoted to first lieutenant, so I was the first lieutenant in the regular Army in the 11th Airborne Division.
And how many parachute jumps did you have? Many?
Oh, I don't remember. We made quite a few.
Uh-huh.
The Korean War then broke out. That's 1950.
Right.
And I volunteered. They didn't take me because they said they needed me back in the training base. And when the Army announced that it was forming Ranger units, why, I volunteered for the Rangers and was accepted. And we went through basic Ranger training at Fort Benning and then up over to Korea.
And about how many, do you remember how many troops there were in Korea? Did we have a pretty large force there?
When the war began?
Yes.
Or before the war began?
Yeah, before the war began.
Basically, you had none. Okay. Basically, the country had pulled out of Korea and thought successfully, and then the North Koreans came across the border, and they threw fresh troops in that were already in Japan into the fight. Their occupying force in Japan suddenly became warriors, and they had to go fight in Korea.
Mm-hmm. And so when America started in the war with Korea, was that difficult for the Korean government to handle that? Did they want the United States in there?
Well, I think they did. I mean,
right.
Who knows what was going on at that time? I mean, when you start talking politics to people who were
right.
lieutenants, you're going to get a different variety of
answer. Yeah. And so then when you went back to Korea during the war, where were you? Where in Korea were you?
Well, we went in there going through Seoul
mm-hmm.
and up into the north. And the unit, I wasn't there at the time, the unit pushed in, all the units that were there all pushed up to the Manchurian border or whatever it was up north, and then got driven back, and MacArthur's invasion came in, and that's when we came in and got involved in the fighting there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a hot time.
It was a hot time in the old town tonight, I guess, right? Yeah, it was, I do have another uncle who was killed in Korea. I understand that was it also the weather that you were fighting in Korea where you were there, and what was the environment like?
I thought it was a very temperate environment. It was when you were there and where you were there when you were there. I mean, somebody who got there in the winter would find it exceedingly bitter. Bitter by standards in the Midwest of the United States, no. Cold and wet, when you didn't have adequate shelter and then didn't have adequate food, made it seem the most miserable extreme climate in the world. It always works that way.
Sure. Well, and again, we talk about even that kind of thing, and you know, in Vietnam, you know, the environment and the jungle and
sure.
and all that, and you know, I remember the story from one gentleman who lives on the island, who was getting back to his division. And he got a ride on a garbage truck and hadn't eaten in about 2 days, and found a sea ration with an old fruit cake in it. And he said that was the best food
sure.
he had ever eaten, you know. And we had our fruit cake around our house for about 8 years, and it never got to it. But
you played ball with it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah. And so then from, and you were in Korea how long? How many years were you there?
I was there for a year and a half.
Okay.
I started out with the 5th Rangers, and after I got shot up and all of that sort of stuff,
You were wounded in Korea?
Oh, yeah. Twice.
And that's where you got your Purple Hearts?
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. I was fortunate otherwise.
Yeah.
But then I ended up operating as special forces before special forces, operating up off of North Korean coast and into North Korea as with guerrilla bands.
And a guerrilla band is just kind of a...
Well, a guerrilla band is local partisans who want to go back home. And they would like to be part of the force that's doing it, but they don't want to join depending. Everybody has his individual circumstance. And so what we did was provide leadership to them, and run them up behind enemy lines, into behind enemy lines, to provide intelligence or provide, in our particular case, naval gunfire guidance and things like that. So we worked with the natives there. I did that for a full year.
Mm-hmm. So essentially they were the local resistance, I guess.
Yeah, it was local resistance, you can call them that.
Yeah, yeah. And so you worked with them for about a year. Did you pick up any Korean language when you were there?
That's what they used to call kitchen Russian or kitchen Korean.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
It's hands and feet in about two words.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have translators?
Pardon?
Did you have translators?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
They are the most underrated and important people in the service over the years.
Yeah.
And having subsequently gone to training in the Russian area, I picked up Russian and found just how important they are, that people who don't speak it but have authority, because they don't understand unless somebody is telling them what is being said, and that's an art in itself.
Sure, and there are so many nuances into what things mean and how we put the, we can use the same word and have it mean exactly the opposite. Yeah, and I did some reading one time about the Native Americans that were that did a lot of the security. What were they called? The Whisperers or the, Native Americans, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the Navajo language people.
Right, the Navajo
language. That was World War II, yeah.
In World War II that no one could translate. The Germans couldn't translate and the Japanese couldn't translate all those things. So now we're talking probably 1953 to 55 in that range.
Well, we skipped about 4 years there.
Oh, okay.
Where I was going through
more training.
Training, and this is where you they trained us to be intelligence analysts. It was a 4-year training course, and when we came out, we spoke fluent Russian, and we were all trained in the Russian background. We were analyst is the best way to phrase it. And then from there, why you either went into the Puzzle Palace in D.C., the Pentagon, or something like that, or you... in my particular case, I volunteered to go to Russia as a military attaché, and I served there for a couple of years.
Well, why don't we stop right there, and then let's talk a little bit about, in our next session here, about you being a military attaché. That's my only French word that I know, is attaché. So we'll stop right there. So, thank you very much, Joe, and... we'll be back with you in the next session.
He's 5'2" and he's 6'4". He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years.